Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a silver pro trained to get gold, Michael Hinderacher.
Man, it sounds so dramatic when you say it like that.
Is it even true?
Yeah, I mean, probably, but like, it's kind of a weird month. I have not had a lot of Magic to play last month or so, excited to kind of ramp things up again.
Yeah, I mean, basically no Magic.
Yeah, there's just very, very little in the way of Grand Prix that are sort of, I mean, even a little bit near us. So,
yeah,
kind of tough.
Yeah, and like, the Pro Tour is even later because, you know, they decided to do it that way. So, like, you just have a long way to go before you play Magic again.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
Are you going to, is there a Grand Prix in Atlanta that you're going to?
Grand Prix Providence is not this weekend, but next weekend.
Oh, and you're going to that?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so hopefully we get a sweet top eight from you and, you know, get really lucky. Get really lucky, Michael.
It's team limited, and I think it's team limited Ixalan sealed on release weekend. So
it
should
really
be
lucky.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be a good time.
You know what is lucky? That we have such an awesome sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. There's no spaces in that. It's just WouldThatBeGood. Letting them know that we sent you that way. You know, Oasis is pretty amazing. We really appreciate them. They're so amazing. They loan me cards even when I forget my escape shifts and have to literally not enter an event because, you know, I don't actually have the key card in my deck to play in the event. So I just hand the deck to Nick Latson, he puts it away for me, and I go home.
It's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough without
escape
shift.
They would have had the escape shifts had I checked them out. And you can get your escape shifts at Oasis Game. So you can also check out our other sponsor at the Mana Source. You can get all of your sealed product at Fusion Gaming, their sponsor. If you go to themanasource.com, you can click on the Fusion Gaming link.
I think it's Mana Base, yeah.
Did I say Mana Source?
Yeah, I think so.
That's a YouTube channel. You can check that out too. The Mana Base is our sponsor. Man, I did not sleep last night. My baby is teething, so I just want to apologize for any mistakes that come up on this podcast. My baby woke up 5 times last night, so I'm really tired. But Fusion Gaming is their sponsor. I know that for a fact. But you can check out the Mana Base and the Mason Slayer in Nikachu. It's so awesome that they sponsor awesome up-and-coming content like ours and like Nikachu. Check them out at Fusion Gaming and the Mana Source. Or the Mana Base. I did it again. The Mana Base. Base. We're all about that base here. I'm so tired, Michael. Save me. Save me somehow. You can also support this podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of the show. Starting at $1 or more per month, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. It means the world to us every time I get that notification. Just $1. Like, if you have the funds, it really, really means the world to us. So check it out at patreon.com/ccmtg. And you get some cool perks. You know, I get to send out wristbands to people. Just the $1 donation, and then, you know, at $5, you get access to the Constructed Critics Group, where you get access to deck lists for us when we go to events such as GPs and Pro Tours, as well as the Deck Doctor and things like that. So check that out at patreon.com/ccmtg. You can also submit a Patreon question. There's a new thread on the Patreon. You just have to be a patron of $1 to do that. Go to patreon.com/ccmtg. You can submit a question there. Let's move on to our first segment of the show, which is hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you are not getting better, you are getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to improve ourselves because Magic's really hard. It's a tough game. Sometimes you even forget your cards for your deck. So I'll go first.
Yeah, we haven't even started playing yet. We're making mistakes. It's so
challenging. I know. It's so difficult. So I went to a PPTQ this weekend, was sleeping on my deck, noticed I was 4 cards short, was super confused, trying to figure out what those 4 cards were. They were scape shifts. So I did not play in the PPTQ. I went home.
I mean, It's kind of funny, right? Like,
it's a lot funny.
Yeah, I've done that before. It's not a good feeling. You're like, oh man.
But I do think that my deck list that I submitted, so if you are in the Constructed Critics group, paying $5 or more on Patreon, you know that I'm very high on Naya Scapeshift right now. And I got to playtest a lot of that going under this PPDQ. I'm really high on the deck. I think that splashing white for Nahirian Path and then playing Leyland on the board is very good right now. We'll get into that later on the show, but yeah, I think that just through my playtesting, I was trying to bounce back from a kind of a bad modern event a few weeks ago, and I think that I had a good shot had I remembered to bring my escape shifts. But yeah, what about you, Michael? What have you done to improve at Magic or life in general this week?
I've been playing a bit of modern. I played a few leagues earlier today and a couple over the last couple of days. Just mostly playing with Death Shadow, just trying to get a feel for what things look like right now. Modern is interesting. It is always kind of cyclical, but there are just enough cards, and I think the power levels are close enough that I think you get more out of just trying to find a deck that you enjoy and work on playing it and mulligans and all that kind of stuff than from really jumping around a ton.
Sure.
So just trying to find a variant of the deck that I'm happy with.
Yeah. Did you find anything you like?
I've been messing around a little bit with Esper, mostly because you get a little bit leaner. So you get main deck Lingering Souls, which is really good in the pseudo mirror, as it's really good with your Liliana of the Veils, and it's also very good against Liliana of the Veil. So you get a couple of those, and then you get Path over Terminate, and I think just generally Lightning Bolt isn't especially impressive right now, and I just feel like the draws to red aren't there as much as they have been in the past. I also wanted to try out Stony Silence on the board, so it's been going well so far.
All right. Well, if you are a Constructor Critic, you can see what Michael's been doing. He has posted in that group, so check that out and the Constructor Critics Facebook group. Let's move on to our next segment, which is our Deck Doctor. So every week on the show, we invite people who are patrons of $5 or more to submit a deck for us to talk about. And Michael is really, really excited about this one.
Yeah, so this deck, if you haven't seen before, it's 4 Death Shadow, 3 Gurmag Angler, 4 Hollow One, 4 Insolent Neonate, 4 Straight Wraith, a Tassiger, 4 Vengevine, 4 Lightning Bolts, 2 Teemer Battle Rages, 4 Cathartic Reunions, 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Thought Seizes, and let's see, it looks like 18 lands, including, it looks like, as far as fetchables, you have 3 Blood Crypts, 2 Stomping Grounds, and 2 Basics. So that leaves you with 11 fetch lands. And in the sideboard, there's an Ancient Grudge, 2 Big Game Hunters, 3 Collective Brutalities, 2 Destructive Revelries, a Grim Lopomancer, a Lightning Axe, a Liliana of the Last Hope, 2 Nile Spellbombs, and 2 Pyroclasms.
So, Michael, what excites you about this deck the most?
So this deck is sort of reminiscent to me of, like, the older Death Shadow Zoo decks. It's, like, somewhere between that and Dredge, kind of.
Sure.
And just fundamentally, I love both those decks, so I think this deck is really sweet. I've seen a few variations, and it looks like, to me, I'm sure you've seen these as well, Spencer. There are some lists playing, like, Gristlebrand and Goryeo's Vengeance.
I actually have not seen those. I've seen this version of the deck. I got to play against it where it was Thought Seizing itself, and I felt in big trouble. Typically when that happens, you're like, oh, I'm probably going to die.
Yeah, this can't be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have not seen the other version of the deck.
Okay, so some people are doing that, and it basically leads me to believe that sort of the flexible slots in the deck are probably like the Lightning Bolts, the Battle Rages, and the Delve Creatures. So everything else is kind of, like, locked in pretty hard, just in that you kind of need it all for the core of the deck to really work. But that the Angler's Tassiger, Bolts, and Battle Rages are a little bit more up for debate.
Okay.
Which makes sense, right? You need the engines to get the Vengevine into the graveyard. All the discard spells are great with, or both the Faithless Looting, sometimes the Thought Seizes, but the Cathartic Reunions are well as great with Hollow One, and subsequently with Vengevine, Insolent Neonate is great with that stuff as well.
So what are the things, I mean, we've kind of talked about why you love the deck. What are the things that you might change with this?
So, I haven't played enough with this deck to be 100% sure on what I'm interested in changing, but the biggest things that stick out to me really are the lightning bolts. It's nice to have that form of interaction, but I'm not sold on lightning bolt being especially good right now. Like, if we look at the decks, I'm not really sure. I guess it's good against Counters Company, probably. But other than that, I'm not really sure where I'm super excited about this card. And ultimately, I don't know that, like, Goryeo's Vengeance is the answer, but it makes me a little bit nervous that, you know, we're playing a 4-of Lightning Bolt in a deck where it doesn't really have a lot of synergy with anything else. And ultimately, I think looking at this deck, it's much more of a synergy deck than a...
Could you see maybe replacing that with some kind of Lightning Axe effect?
I think you could try something like that. I think you could also try to play less Delve creatures and go for some sort of Becomeimmense Battle Rage combo finish style deck. It's a little bit hard to say. I think that ultimately the biggest problem with cards like Lightning Bolt is just that they're not... It's obviously a good magic card, right? It has utility. It's never going to be dead. But when you look at how it advances your game plan, I just don't really see it.
Sure. I could definitely see trying something like Lightning Rex in that slot and seeing it, you know, being able to kill both Gurmag Angler and Tassiger in this format is perfectly reasonable. Now, it doesn't kill things like Titan, so that's a little bit rough, but I think that you don't really worry about Titan as much with this deck, so I wouldn't be worried about that too much. I do really like Big Game Hunter out of the board, something that I feel like we kind of glossed over, but I mean, Big Game Hunter was really good a few months ago, and I think it's coming back to being really good again, so I'm kind of excited about that.
It's better when you have a lot of ways to make yourself discard. Now, people had tried it some in Death Shadow in, like, Traverse-style decks to discard to Liliana, but yeah. In a deck like this where you actually have, like, 8 or I guess 12 right. kind of dedicated outlets, it definitely seems more impactful to me. So yeah, I think that's kind of a sweet one.
It can be a really big game, I think, in this deck.
Very good.
That was so bad.
Very good.
So where do you think this deck stands today?
So this deck has kind of got hot for a minute, and I know it put up at least some 5-0 leagues on Moto, but it hasn't really seemed to translate that into paper. And ultimately, like, looking at this, it just looks inconsistent, right? Like, you're going to have a lot of draws where you are kind of, like, you know what you're trying to Faithless Looting or Cathartic Reunion into, but if you don't hit them, there isn't a lot of redundancy, right? Like, your draws with multiple Vengevines are just going to be so much better than any draw without
all of your other draws. I think that's just true of Vengevine decks, though.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't disagree with that. It's more just... that if we're looking at why I think this deck maybe hasn't put up the paper results.
I think that it's a better version of what people try to do with Prized Amalgam in Standard.
Sure. Well, it's more explosive, right? But it feels kind of similar to those decks, right? Yeah. Where you're just... there are a lot of moving pieces, and they're all unique enough that, right, like... Gurmag Angler doesn't do the same thing as Hollow One, doesn't do the same thing as Death Shadow, doesn't do the same thing as Vengevine. So we have all these different creatures that we're kind of trying to draw the right mix of. And that's just difficult to do.
Do you think that this deck could benefit from playing some more high power stuff, like maybe Liliana of the Veil?
Maybe. I think the problem ultimately is that your fair game is just inherently going to be so weak because of all the, like, Cathartic Reunions, Faithless Lootings, and there's just a lot of stuff that, like, doesn't really synergize with like, a fair, powerful game plan that I don't know that make the decks, that doesn't make the deck inherently bad, but it makes me want to focus on it and think about it more as a combo deck. Okay. Like, I would rather try to move in the other direction, so I can appreciate the thought process behind, like, putting in Goryeo's Vengeance and Gristlebrand, even though I don't know that that actually improves the deck. I think that the fundamental direction that idea shows is probably better.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the deck, Doctor. Like we said, maybe try things like Lightning Axe in the main deck, and maybe even check out some of those Gristlebrand versions of the deck. So thank you so much for that submission, And let's move on to our next segment, which is our power rankings. So every week on the show, we like to talk about a specific format, whether it's standard, legacy, or modern. We like to talk about the formats that people are playing the most of. And this week, we're going to talk about modern, because there was a modern classic and a modern open, and we're going to talk about what's going on. So the way that this works is we give points according to their finish. So they get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, four for top four, three for top eight, two for top 32, and then one for top 60, top 64, if available. There were no top 64 results, but let's go over the decks and what's going on. So I want to give honorable mentions to Eldrazi, Tron, and Elves, which came in with 8 points tied for fifth place. They had lower finishes than the deck that we're going to talk about in fifth place, but they did have the same number of points. So I just want to give a shout out to both of those decks, both Eldrazi, Tron, and Elves. Coming in with 8 points in fifth place, we do have Jund, making a... Like, this is a weird week, man. There are a couple of decks that are making comebacks, and Jund is definitely one of them. And the deck that took third in the open is, like, very classic Jund. Like, one Kalidas, one Olivia, one Chandra, Jund.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to see this style of deck do well again. I mean, to be fair, it's one result from one event, but the biggest... Fundamentally, Jund is in sort of a strange place right now. It used to be that Lightning Bolt was so much better than Path to Exile in the early turns of the game that I felt like Jund was just sort of inherently better than Abzan in a lot of matchups. But the printing of Fatal Push sort of solved that problem for Abzan, whereas it didn't. I don't think it's helped Jund nearly as much, just because Fatal Push and Lightning Bolt largely kill the same creatures, whereas Fatal Push and Path are just like a more complementary pairing.
Yeah. I do think that Kolaghan's Command is a lot better than most things that you get. Like, I think it's better than Siege Rhino.
Yeah, I would say it's more like Hate Command versus Lingering Souls is kind of... Right? It's like... grindy spell that's also good against affinity.
Yeah. I think that Lingering Souls is probably actually better against affinity, but I do think that Cake Command is better in other random matchups.
Yeah, well, and you look at how lean this deck is. It's very, like, you have, I mean, I guess you have the Chandra, the Kalidas, and the Olivia, but there are so many one-drops, and just, like, the mana efficiency of a deck like this is really tremendous, and I think... just being able to actually justifiably play four Liliana Veil plus four Dark Confidant, the power level's really high.
Yeah, and this deck finally is, it was doing it a little while ago, but, like, being able to trim lands, I mean, there was a time when Jund was playing 27 lands in Modern, and just being able to play a higher concentration of spells because of the number of one-drops and two-drops that you're playing is pretty good.
Definitely. I think that's true, and I think that this deck also gets a lot of mileage, like having the Raging Ravines, and just like Scavenging Ooze is a mana sink. There's a lot of things that I like with Jund, and I think that Abzan is obviously similar, but I think a lot of the time with these style of decks, it comes down to just what you're comfortable with, and I think it's hard to say that one is dramatically better than the other most of the time.
Yeah, one of the people in the chat is saying is asking about Chandra Torture of Defiance versus Chandra Pyromancer, and I do personally like Chandra Torture of Defiance better. I think that while the other Chandra lets you hit your land drops, I just don't know that matters as much.
No, once you're already at four, literally the only thing in the deck that is going to require a lot more is like Olivia or Raging Ravine, and should those be really important on the next turn or two, you can also just use the Chandra to make mana.
Yep, exactly.
Right, but without Tireless Tracker or any, you know, if we're not trying to really get to six, I think it probably just doesn't matter that you can hit land drops.
Yeah. Coming up next with 9 points, we have Green-Red Volcut. This came in with Breach and Scapeshift decks, some with both Breach and Scapeshift in the deck, but I want to talk about this really quick because I myself, after some testing this week, was thinking about putting Breach into my Naya deck as maybe a three of them and including Emrakul. The list on our screen is very, very Scapeshift, though. Some of the things that people are doing online is that they're including They're including Prismatic Omens because of the printing of Hour of Promise. Where do you land in what this deck should look like, Michael?
It's tricky. I think that this deck has metagames where it is really powerful, but the one thing that Hour of Promise does, for better or worse, is it makes you just very, very... I mean, this is always something Scapeshift has struggled with. It's a very linear, right? I mean, you have one game plan, and your ability to execute it against almost anything isn't really in question. It's just whether or not that game plan is actually powerful enough to win games. And I think that Scapeshift is in a reasonable place right now. I like the Prismatic Omens. I think they get a lot better with Hour of Promise, like being able to get... It's mostly going to be, what, 12 damage split across four triggers. Anytime you have Prismatic Omen into Hour is really powerful. I also think Hour just makes you a better Scapeshift deck in general, because it's getting two lands from one card. So that's my inclination right now. Have you liked Prismatic Omen?
Yeah, I've played versions with it. I don't have it in my current version, in my Naya version. One of the things that I don't like in the deck is Explore. I feel like that card's super lazy and not a very good inclusion.
It's kind of that last slot, right?
I don't even know if that's true. Like, you could just be, like, if you want a cycling effect, I would rather just play a main deck Relic or multiple main deck Relics, to be honest. Like, I don't like Explore. One of the questions in chat is they don't really understand Wood Elves' inclusion in the deck. Honestly, Wood Elves is just, like, the next best ramp spell. And so often, I don't know how often you want the fourth Farseek. This one is playing a lot of ramp spells, right? Because it is a straight-up Prismatic Omens deck. So because of that, it plays all four Farseek and the Wood Elves. A lot of lists will play three Farseek and the Wood Elves. I think it just... Wood Elves lets you play another two mana ramp spell, but also pads your life total.
It does some things with Summoner's Pact specifically.
It
like
does.
Being able to immediately get a land, but also block. Like sometimes you can like Summoner's Pact into Wood Elves, play Wood Elves, get a land, play another ramp spell, and like. If you
and block, someone, and then next turn you can still pay the four and Scapeshift.
So Sakura Tribe Elder can mostly do that, but there are just corner cases where getting the land untapped is important.
We talked about that a few weeks ago on the podcast when I talked about my play with the Wood Elves and how I had a similar line come up. So
just to clarify, so usually. The main thing is that Wood Elves is green neutral, so there'll be a lot of spots where you need one more land to Scapeshift, and you could get a Sakura Tribe Elder, except you only have two green sources, and if you have two green sources, you can get Wood Elves instead, stay on two green sources, and kill them with a Scapeshift. That's the number one place that makes a difference.
And the land coming into play untapped is very, very important there. Because your other two mana spells put the land into play tapped.
So they are not green neutral, whereas Wood Elves is green neutral. That's basically the difference.
Oh, I understand what you mean by green neutral now. Yes.
Right.
Michael said it correct.
It doesn't force you to go down on green sources to get one more land. So it and Search for Tomorrow are the only ones that do that. But having one that you can specifically get off Summoner's Pact, it probably becomes less relevant as you start trimming Summoner's Pacts, but like this list is only playing two. But that is typically I think around the time Summoner's Pact got really popular as like a 3 or 4 of, it was the time you really started seeing Wood Elves pop up with regularity.
Yep. Coming in with 11 points, we have Blue-White Control. This is a deck that we actually talked about a few weeks ago. This deck saw a lot of play online recently. The version on the screen, though, has two Glimmer of Genius.
Yeah, I kind of like that, actually. I've seen these lists playing Sphinx's Revelation sometimes.
Yes.
And it seems like maybe in Modern right now, Glimmer lines up a little bit better. Just because we're not getting into these super long, crazy, grindy games. It's also, for whatever it's worth, you can't take it with an Inquisition.
Sure.
I can't imagine that comes up a ton, but the one time it does, you're probably going to feel like a genius.
I think that this deck has a lot of simulated card advantage, and you don't need that much actual card advantage to win. So between Glimmer and Supreme Verdict and Jace Architect of Thought, you might just get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, Supreme Verdict is pretty good right now. I think Gideon of the Trials is...
weirdly good.
Quite good. It's really good against all of these, like... it's pretty good against Death Shadow, right? Like, all these decks that are sort of trying to make, like, a one big threat and, like, then sort of aggro control you out. The combination of Gideon of the Trials and Supreme Verdict, it's just, like... I've had a lot of situations where playing against Blue-White, I've, like, tapped out for a Gurmag Angler when they're tapped out or something, or, you know, I have some counterspell backup, but I have to use it. And then they will slam Gideon plus on your creature, and then if you can't get the Supreme Verdict out of their hand, it just... It creates these really awkward board states, and especially against Death Shadow, where they're hitting their own life total over and over, it's quite powerful.
Oh, the list on the screen is very different than the list that I sent. So this the list on the screen only has one Gideon of the Trials, and an Elspeth Sun's Champion instead of a Gideon Jura and three Gideons and the Jace.
Interesting. So, I mean, people have played it a bunch of different ways, and I think that ultimately, like, all of these decks trying to go low on land count, like Spreading Seas is very powerful, more powerful than it's been in a while. There are a lot of decks not playing that many basics, so the combination, like various combinations of Tech Edge, Ghost Quarter, you just have like a surprisingly good kind of cantrips plus mana denial game plan in addition to some really heavy hitters at the top of the curve.
Yeah, I also like that the deck has moved away from Manaleak. The deck on the screen is updated now with the list that we were talking about. And I like the moving away from Manaleak. I like being, you know, just Cryptic Commands and stuff like that. So
yeah, it always depends, but I think there are a lot of ways to build this deck, and you can really play sort of the mix of cards that you personally enjoy. I think that's really appealing.
I think that Spreading Seas does the thing that Manaleak was doing anyway, right? It does that mana denial job, like, without having to leave up mana.
Yeah, it also, I mean, just the cantrips on that kind of stuff.
Right.
Between that and Snapcaster and all these Planeswalkers, you often get pigeonholed with, like, Thought Seizes against decks like this, where you just have to take one thing because it's going to be really, really difficult to beat. And then all these other cards do something but are also generating extra value. And I think that that just, like, is really powerful against the sort of style of attrition decks we're seeing these days.
Yeah, let's go on to our next deck. We have Death Shadow decks coming in with 16 points, 9 of them coming from Grixis alone. So there was an Esper version, a Jund version, a 5-color version, and then a bunch of Grixis versions. The list on the screen is very classic Grixis. But, you know, I think that the reason that this deck is... I think this deck has gotten away from being a pure numbers game deck, where it's like, everyone in the room is playing it, into it's just one of the best decks.
It is. I mean, I think this deck does a lot of what Delver does in Legacy. It Thought Seizes your early interaction and then beats you on mana efficiency. And I hate playing against this deck and, like, having to mulligan. It's just the death sentence. Right? When you like mold of six and they're on the play and you're like, well, I'm going to get Thought Seized on one and mostly just be out of the game. And so many games go like that.
Do you think that this deck will want opt over things like Sleight of Hand?
I am not 100% sure. I don't think the instant speed matters as much here. I think that although this deck has a large number of instants, it doesn't usually end up playing out quite like that. I don't know how much... So Sleight of Hand is like sort of the last card in the main deck for a lot of people. So if we just... The bigger question is, would you ever play Opt over Serum Visions or Thought Scout?
That's actually where I was going to go next, is that I actually think I might play it over Serum Visions. And the reason is because you get a Scry one first. And I think that this deck wants card quality immediately, not waiting for it. And because you get to play it at instant speed, it almost does the exact same thing, but you get to do it at instant speed.
That's interesting. I kind of agree with that, but one of the things I actually like about Serum Visions in this deck is that you're a little bit threat light, so being able to hide things on top of your deck is actually pretty good sometimes.
Okay, just like in a mirror match or against Jund?
Yeah, there are so many Thought Seizes in this format that Serum Visions being able to just let you draw something next turn can actually be pretty powerful.
What is the difference there? So like they're not going to take your opt though.
Well, so that is true in some amount of the time. I'll be interested to see. I'm not sure. I haven't played a lot with opt.
I don't know either. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, but I think that if there is a deck that's interested in it, it is the Snapcaster Death Shadow deck.
Right. No, and I mean it would be better with Snapcaster certainly. That part is not even close. I don't know. It's possible too that it wouldn't have to necessarily be like a 0-4 split. It's possible that you could end up with some sort of intermediate split.
That's true. It could be a 3-2 split between Visions and
Opt. I have no idea. I'll have to do some messing around with Opt and see how I like it. But I think this deck is really solid. Like,
I do too.
Your card quality is just good. You see a lot of cards in every game. You have a lot of ability to build the 75 to do what you're interested in doing.
I'm also kind of just really happy that this deck has just found its place in the meta, isn't overly powerful, and it's just a great inclusion into the metagame. You know, so often in Modern, like when a deck rises, it just very clearly needs to go. And I think that Grix has actually put a stamp on the format that is fun. Like, the games are very interactive. The deck is very interesting. It's solid. It's beatable. Like, what a just great inclusion. And it actually, I think this deck made Modern so much better.
Yeah, I really like this deck. And I agree that, I mean, I know people get frustrated playing against, you know, the Thoughtseize Inquisition decks. But as long as those cards are legal, there are always going to be decks. I mean, whether it's this or Jund or Abzan, you're always going to be playing it against decks with 6 to 8 of those effects regularly.
Absolutely. And you know, I don't hate Thoughtseize as much as other people do, but I can understand it.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, I think that this deck ends up playing surprisingly fair Magic for how busted some of its openings can be. Like, a lot of the games, you're really just playing very, very grindy Magic with Snapcaster Mages and a couple of Delve creatures, and it almost resembles Grixis Control.
All right, let's move on to our next deck with 20 points, Michael. Taking first, second, and second in the Classic and Open, we have Jeskai Control. It's not a control deck.
Sort of a control deck, right?
It's Jeskai Tempo. But what is happening? It's so funny. I feel like, was it 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how Blue White and Jeskai were like making a push in Modern. Like they were up and coming decks, and now like the two just like really put a stamp on this week.
Yeah, the decks in first and second are basically the exact same.
Yeah, the only difference is Spell Snare.
Yeah, Spell Snare over in like the main one deck. Cryptic and
I think it's one Electrolyze. Yeah.
So basically the same main deck. And I think that these decks are good against Death Shadow. I think that Snapcaster Mage in general is quite good against Death Shadow. It's just good against Thoughtseize effects.
Yeah.
Because it provides redundancy for every spell in your hand, right? So I think that these decks are like pretty well positioned. I think that in general, there's a lot of play to them, and you probably don't have a whole lot of matchups that are abysmal. These decks get pretty far away from the blue-white style. They're basically flash decks with some Geists, right?
Yeah, and I think that the reason that you have to play Geist is, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and your Scapeshift matchup without Geist is actually abysmal.
You just need the clock.
Yeah, I haven't played a ton against Spellqueller. I think Spellqueller also probably helps that matchup. But like, if you look, there's like no Restoration Angels. There's like, it's not like your old school Jeskai. It's a Spellqueller Geist deck. And I think that that's because it brings you closer to 50-50 against that deck. In my opinion, it's probably still a bad matchup for Jeskai. You just have too many cards that like do basically nothing. They're just burn spells to the face, and you don't have enough cheap ones to make that matchup good. But Geist and Spellquiller probably push you to the point where, like, okay, I'm now competitive against this deck that's just, like, a huge part of the metagame, and I'm very, very, very good against the decks that are trying to beat that deck and the decks that that deck beats. I think that Jeskai occupies a very good place where it's like, okay, I'm not good against the best deck, but I'm playable against the best deck, and I'm very good against the things trying to beat it.
Yeah, I think that it just lines up surprisingly well. A lot of the cards aren't really all that powerful, but I think that Logic Knot, I've been really impressed with that anytime
I've played
that card. It just feels way closer to Counterspell, especially in like the first six or seven turns of the game.
It's so funny. It's like, this is a thing that we've had the whole time, and sometimes it's like shown up as a one of in some lists. And like, it feels like in the last like 6 months, it was really discovered and people are like, oh, no, this is just good. We should just be doing this.
Yeah, there was that Japanese Grand Prix list that was like all just 24 lands and all four ofs.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what the split on creatures and burn spells and stuff was, but I think that it was basically invented to have a good Death Shadow matchup, and that at least for this weekend, both these guys really found just the right mix of spells to make most of the matchups at least palatable. And I think the thing, when you're looking at a deck like this, there are going to be a number of games where, especially if your opponent is taking a bunch of damage from their lands, like Snapcaster plus Lightning Bolt, just that kind of stuff is really powerful. But you can definitely win some games with a quick Geist backed up by a Counterspell or two and a Burn spell. It's just flexible. I think this deck can win in a lot of different ways, and that's really powerful when you put it in the hands of good players.
All right, so talking about Modern, what would you play and why, Michael?
I think I would probably still play Death Shadow. I doubt your Jeskai matchup is very good, but I also think that playing things you are especially unfamiliar with just leads to playing them badly. So that's probably what I would stick with for this week. What about you, Spencer?
Yeah, I'm going to do some more testing of Naya Valakut, but honestly, I think that enough thing, like, the metagame's getting to the point where, like, people are trying to attack the things that are good against Death Shadow, to the point where I might actually consider playing Death Shadow again. Specifically Grixis, I just want to play a really solid list. So it's either that or Naya for me.
Yeah, I think those are both totally reasonable choices.
So, let's move on to our training ground. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to either make you better at Magic or life in general. Today, we're going to talk about analogs. And we're going to talk about the noun analogs. This is a question I got when posting the topic to our patrons. So every week on the show, whenever we can, we like to post a poll to let you guys vote on what we talk about during the training grounds. And one of the questions that I got from multiple people is, what do you mean analogs? And I'm talking about the noun and analog. And so that is a person or thing that is comparable to another. So examples of this are things like Doomblade and Go for the Throat, right? They're one in a black, 2-mana removal spells that kill target creature. That one of them kills non-black creatures, one of them kills non-artifact creatures, or Farseeking Rampant Growth, right? One of them grabs any basic land, one of them grabs non-forest land for one in a green. So these are cards that are almost the same. Like, they serve the same purpose for the most part. Go for the Throat is objectively more powerful than Doomblade. Farseek is objectively more powerful than Rampant Growth. But at the end of the day, does it really matter? The texture of the format can matter, but the card basically does the same thing. Make sense, Michael?
Right. Yep, that makes perfect sense to me.
So, looking and understanding how a Magic card fits into a format can be really hard. You know, like, how many times do we get cards wrong? Like, basically all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to look at a card and just say whether or not it'll be good and why.
Yeah. So, when you think about analogs, how can they help you with that part of Magic, right? And understanding what makes a card good, what makes a card powerful.
I think that ultimately, analogs, what they mostly do is provide you context that sort of gives you a shortcut, right? So where normally if you're evaluating an effect and you've never seen anything like it before, it can be really tough to figure out how exactly it'll play, like when it'll be good, when it won't be good. And I think that having played with similar cards before, even if they don't do exactly the same thing, sort of format features notwithstanding, you at least know, like, when this card would be good, why it would be good, when it would be bad.
Yeah. I think Fatal Push, like, for a lot of people, thought it would be, like, an analog to Shock. And it actually turned out to be, like, an analog to Swords to Plowshares, right? So, like, that's one that's very interesting, right? Like, you see this card that you think, okay, so, like, what creature, like, at its base, it's going to kill creatures with, you know, converted mana cost 2 or less. That might be, like, a Lightning Bolt-style effect or maybe a Shock-style effect, right? You know, so you're getting a baseline for about how good you can expect a card to be. You know, I think about Whip Flare and Pyroclasm, right? It's like, okay, so in a lot of games, Whip Flare is either going to be great or not playable, whereas Pyroclasm always does the same thing. And I think that you see those things a lot, right? I remember early on in Innistrad Standard, I was trying to play a lot of Victim of the Night decks. I really thought that Victim of the Night was, like, going to be, like, the next great removal spell. You know, the texture of the format, though, can dictate whether or not those analogs actually fit into the format. And it could also be why the analog even exists, right? Wizards could be telling you something with those abilities.
Absolutely. I think that's often the case to some extent, right? So I also think it's interesting to look at, like, with something like Fatal Push, not just the other cards that things are being played against, but sometimes the cards that you're allowed to play really change how good a spell can be, right? Something like Fatal Push in Standard probably does end up playing much closer to Shock than it does to Swords to Plowshares or Path to Exile. But in Modern, obviously, this card is basically invalidated Lightning Bolt.
Which is so weird.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's like mostly...
Before it existed, Lightning Bolt was literally the best card in Modern.
Well, and I mean, it's not fair to attribute that all to Fatal Push, but...
Hello?
But it definitely has shaken things up quite a bit. I think that, like, a lot of the time, the restrictions are important, but even if the restrictions are different, and sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, like, with a card like Ultimate Price, you might not know exactly how prevalent multicolored creatures are going to be when you're looking at the set early, right? It's hard to say exactly how many multicolored creatures you're going to play against on a regular basis, but you probably, you know, you still know fundamentally, so, like, what kind of decks is this card good against, right? Oh. If my opponent's playing, like, a go-wide white weenie deck, I probably don't want a ton of Ultimate Prices because they're just not going to line up efficiently.
Ultimate Price is really an example for, I mean, especially in its format, right? Because, like, what were the decks? It was, like, mono black and mono blue, but, like, also the decks were full of hybrid right. Mana creatures. So, like, it didn't actually line up that well. And I think that that's true a lot. I think that understanding how the card fits into the format does tell you a lot, but also getting a baseline and starting with, like, what can I compare this to is pretty important. So when you're looking for an analog, what type of effects are you typically looking for, Michael?
I think you're generally, analogs are easiest to see with the most simple cards, right? The less complex a card is, the easier it is to find analogs, but probably also the less useful that really is to you because they're just easier cards to evaluate. So a lot of the time, you can start with finding the things that you basically, like, when you're looking at spells, the simple ones a lot of the time have either been printed before or there are other very similar effects, right? So, like, Lightning Strike is in the set. We've had that before. Duress is in the set. We've had that before. I mean, Opt, we haven't had specifically in a very long time, but we've had effects similar to that before. So you kind of know, like, the sorts of decks that would want each of these effects and what might make them good or bad in a given format.
I think that Duress is, like, a very interesting one. So, like, what was our previous analog for Duress? It was, like, Transgress the Mind. that was kind of the discard spell of choice that you might play out of your sideboard. And I think that understanding where the cards are different and where they're going to fit and like what matchups and what textures of games will look like when you want something like Lightning Strike or Incendiary Flow or Duress or Transgress the Mind is kind of important to the deck. Like, when is Lightning Strike going to be better and when was Incendiary Flow going to be better? And does the format line up that Lightning Strike actually is better? This is something that happened for when Delver was in Standard. People were convinced Delver was going to continue to be good. It wasn't going to matter. You were still going to have enough cantrips and unsummon over Vapor Snag. And it was like, it was surprising how much better Vapor Snag was than unsummon. Like, you were constantly like, I cannot believe how much better Vapor Snag is.
Right.
It's like one line of text, but it was enough. That was it. You were done. You lost one too many cantrips, you lost Vapor Snag, and the deck was over. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff is true. I know we've both been kind of interested in looking at decks that can play Heart of Kirin again, with the thought that some Lightning Strikes will replace some Abrades.
Yes.
I mean, just... And a lot of the thoughts, I think, when you're looking at a set, like, early, and you haven't really had a chance to play with a ton of it yet, they can just be thoughts like that. Like, you can get a lot of mileage out of, like, maybe Fumigate is less good because Spell Pierce exists. Maybe Heart of Kirin is better because, right? I mean, they don't have to be, like, really well-developed, fully thought-out ideas, but when you're looking for places to start with developing decks and trying to get an idea of what you think a format will look like, just sort of having some ideas on, like, how do new cards, in comparison to cards we already had available to us, how do they change what you want to be doing? I think Delver is a really good example.
Yeah. How do you evaluate an analog on power versus its counterpart? You know, Vapor Snag and Unsummoner are very clear, right? Like, one of them literally is the same card with an extra line of text.
Right, but 99% of the time it's just better.
Exactly. But when you think about something like maybe Scattered to the Winds versus another cancel style effect, like, how do you evaluate those style of things?
So a lot of the time that stuff is really hard to figure out without knowing what a format is going to look like, and that's one of the reasons I think there's a lot of value in trying to sort of get some general ideas about what you expect a format to look like, at least on some level. But a lot of the time you're sort of looking at, like, okay, so last time this effect was printed and we played it, what made it good, right? Why was it good? So, like, you know, like, Thoughtseize, right, is probably just going to be better than Duress most of the time. But there, I could imagine a format where that wasn't true. Like, if a format was burn heavy enough, you might, or just aggressive enough, you might think that you don't really want any of those effects, and Duress is better as a sideboard card. So I think if you look at, like, what you expect to be played in a format, that can sort of tip you off towards... When cards are similar, right? I mean, obviously, if we're looking at Vapor Snag and Unsummon, it's very clear one is just going to be better. If we're looking at cards that are a little closer, like... I mean, you were talking about Ultimate Price, right? But Ultimate Price versus Doomblade is not always going to be clear-cut. I could imagine formats where one would be much better than the other, but it's not clear in a vacuum.
I mean, on its surface, it seems like the Ultimate Price... Like, if we were to hierarchy these three spells, right? It would be like... Doomblade at the bottom, then Ultimate Price, then Go for the Throat. Doomblade always saw the most play out of those cards.
It can be for all kinds of reasons, right?
Right.
I mean, you can say, like, okay, well, if Pack Rat isn't a magic card and the control finishers that people play aren't black, like, it can literally come down to combing through a spoiler and saying, I don't think more than four or five black creatures are going to be played in this format, and even the decks that play black aren't going to be playing black creatures.
Right.
And, so, yeah, I think that, like, that kind of stuff is really critical for trying to decide how playable cards end up being.
So how do you, when you're looking, you know, when you're looking for an effect, right? So, like, we're talking about understanding analogs and, like, how they fit into the format, but where do you find them? Like, where do you find the effect type that you're looking for?
So it can be tricky because I think that really comes down to what you expect to play against, right? I mean, kind of getting back into this again, like the more one drops you expect your opponents to play, maybe the better Fatal Push is than Doomblade, right? But if they're playing a bunch of fives and sixes, you might rather have something that looks more like a Doomblade style effect or even a cast out style effect if you expect a lot of Planeswalkers. So there's always sort of a sliding scale on cost versus versatility. And I think trying to find where you're supposed to fit in that scale for different effects is the really one of the really critical things in deck building.
Any resources that you typically go to try and find these effects?
I mean, usually you end up being aware of the cards, right? It's very rare that there are cards that you're not playing that you actually don't know that they exist. But more than that, I think we did an episode like this a while ago where it came down to like trying to pick removal spells and why you might choose one over the other. And I think just being conscious of why you're playing the exact mix you are is kind of the most important thing.
Yeah. I constantly find myself, maybe I'm too cute, going to things like Gatherer, or sometimes like if I don't know exactly what I need, but like know that I need something, sometimes I'll literally open like five windows at once and just go through all of the spoilers and be like just filter by color, and things like that, and trying to find the thing. But also, I think combing through deck lists and seeing what similar people, like similar styles of lists are trying to do, will help you understand like, oh, actually this is the effect I was looking for, and this person figured it out.
Definitely. I think that's true. I also think looking through a bunch of these deck lists can help you understand sideboarding. Like when you see what they're sideboarding and you're trying to go through and find different effects at different costs and figure out what the right mix is and, you know, how often you want to board them out and what matchups they're good in. All that kind of stuff really, really kind of comes together. I think with a lot of analogs, when they're like card for card, they're really easy. And where it's maybe a little more interesting is when we're looking at cards that maybe fill the same role in a similar
yes.
deck. So if we're looking at like, I forget the name of this card. It's the one from the new set that's the 5-mana 4/4 that makes a 3/3 with haste.
Okay, yes.
It's something region. I forget the name. But if we're looking at like, what cards does this compare most closely to that we've played with recently? And like, why were some of these cards good and why were some bad? And how does this fit? And I think looking at more complex cards and trying to find where they compare to other cards is probably more interesting, right? So like, why would you want this over Glorybringer sometimes? Or
yeah,
what does this end up feeling close to?
Yeah. And also how it lines up against things like Glorybringer, right? Like if I'm playing this as my 5-drop and then they play a Glorybringer, like what do those games look like? And it's funny because like, is Avacyn an analog for Glorybringer? Like, yeah, kind of. It's like a big flying creature.
Yeah, I think expanding on the idea of just straight analogs is sort of looking at, when you're looking at multiple cards in the same format, then you're looking at trade-offs, right?
Right.
So what makes, and that kind of ties back into what we're looking at when we're looking at examples of old cards, but this can happen just within a format too, right? If we had access to both, I mean, for most of the last one, we've had access to Transgress and Lay Bare the Heart, right? So they're like pretty similar cards. But, you know, what I vaguely remember playing a Lay Bare the Heart against Aetherworks Marvel, just feeling like the biggest idiot ever,
yes.
right? Because I hadn't really considered that I couldn't take the card I was perhaps most concerned about. And I think that gets more complex when the cards are more complex. But it's interesting to think about why you might play, you know, Glorybringer or this new dinosaur, or Avacyn, or you have so many choices, and trying to make those choices correctly and understanding why you're making them is really critical.
Well, that is going to do it for this week's Training Grounds. Thank you so much to the patrons who voted on it. I hope that was helpful for you. I hope that we gave some insights into the way that we think about these style of cards and effects and how we evaluate them. Feel free to leave a comment on the episode. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer anything there. Don't forget, you can go to patreon.com/CCMDG to become a patron of the show, starting at $1 more per month. Anything that you donate is really, really appreciated. It means the world to us. Michael, if people want to find you outside of Patreon, where can they find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Handrocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Halland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, themanabase.com, constructivecriticism.com, here on YouTube, and on patreon.com. So you can also like the podcast on Facebook, just Constructive Criticism, and you can join the Constructive Criticism family. Just ask for an ad. We'd be happy to add you. And if you're a patron of $5 or more per month, you can join the Contracted Critics Facebook group. You can also join the Discord channel. All of these are in the bios page on constructivecriticism.com. Just click the link, join the Discord channel. There's people there talking about magic all the time. You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE. Did I get that right?
R before Y, but, you know, it was close.
All right. Close.
Just spell Earthstripe and then...
It wouldn't be our meme, right?
It's hard to spell, oddly.
Especially since it's just spelled how it sounds, but also not, because, you know.
Right. Yeah, just, you know, spell it, like, correctly and correctly.
Yeah, exactly. You can also join the conversation by tweeting, #WithABeGood. #WithABeGood is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. And this week... we have, Andrew.
Says,
I think they're all Andrew.
Well, not all, but some of them.
SCGKY this weekend, rocking the Eldrazi Tron and hoping to do well. #SCGKY, #MTG, #Modern, #WithABeGood. I understand that he dated, so congratulations to Andrew.
Yeah, that's good. That's
next up, you.
Good feeling.
What's up next?
Andrew also tweets, I'm SOV Mason, herter. I cast Scapeshift to win, herter. Going to be a good weekend. And then I believe he...
stole his sunglasses?
I don't know. He took a picture of himself holding a Scapeshift and pretending to be Mason.
Is that a Chinese Scapeshift or a Russian Scapeshift? I can't tell.
It is a Chinese Scapeshift. Japanese.
We're being told it's Japanese. It doesn't look Japanese.
I'm pretty sure that's Chinese.
It's definitely not Japanese. Well, I also worked at a place. Mason's in our ear trying to correct us, and we both sorted magic cards for a thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Chinese.
But I think it's Chinese also.
It is a sweet Scapeshift.
It is a sweet Scapeshift. 6-3 to end the day at SCGKY. Here's to hoping enough for day two. #WithABeGood. I hear it was good enough. And congratulations, Andrew. Had a fun weekend at SCGKY. Favorite part was friends doing well and crushing it. Shout out specifically to Daniel. #WithABeGood. Mason, why don't you shout out Daniel?
Sure, I had to turn my mic on. So all my friends, a lot of us went up there. I think there was like 13 of us that went up, and 8 made day 2, and that was awesome to have that many people make day 2 and do so well. But specifically my friend Daniel, I think this is like his second GP he's ever played, and he's been trying really hard to practice, and he was in contention for top 8 for a good bit there at Death Shadow, and he finished up X4, and I think he got like 40th place, so I just want to give him a shout-out because he's awesome, and he's doing hard work.
Do people in the Midwest call SCGs GPs?
Did I say that?
He did.
I meant this is like his second SCG. Sorry. Oh, whoopsies.
Well, shout out to Daniel.
Yeah.
Michael, what did you learn this week?
I learned a lot about what did well in Modern this weekend. It's always fun to watch the results roll in from these events because it's just an open enough format that kind of anyone seems to be able, like, the good players seem to be able to win with a whole bunch of weird stuff. Like, looking at this top 8, I mean, Jund hasn't done especially well in a while, but there was also 2 different Death Shadow decks, Storm, Jeskai, 8 Rack, and Eldrazi and Taxes. So, just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I learned that if you do a very specific training grounds, Michael gets really into it. You seem to really enjoy this training grounds.
Yeah, I like this one. I think that trying to figure out how to compare cards and how to decide between them is like, it's a good constructed skill, but it's also a good limited skill. I think it helps give you an understanding of how games are going to play out, and not only how to most effectively play your cards, but also how to play against them. And I think that that's pretty critical to getting better.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for listening this week, and we'll see you guys all next week.
See you guys.
Magic, magic, magic.